You're watching The Week Ahead. My name is Ibrahim Sani. We are entering the third week of January. It's going to be a very short week for us because many of us are going to take Monday off in conjunction with Taipusam, falling on Tuesday. So within the next 3 days, Wednesday to Friday, what shall we take a look at? We're going to start off with the big story of Azam Baki, the commissioner of the Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission. Tan Sri Azam Baki has been summoned to give an explanation on the controversy surrounding his purchases of share ownership. And he was ordered to appear before the Parliamentary Select Committee or the PSC on the agencies under the Prime Minister's Department on Wednesday. Let's take a look.
An official letter has been issued by Dewan Rakyat Secretary Nizamuddin Bacha to Azam, asking him to present himself before the PSC in Parliament on January 19, a day before the Dewan Rakyat sits for a special meet to discuss the recent flooding across the country. Azam has previously said that he will not resign as the chief of the MACC, nor will he heed demands to quit, adding that the Yang di-Pertuan Agong is the only one who can decide to terminate him. Founder of the anti-graft movement Rasuah Busters, Dato' Husamuddin Yaakob, called for urgent reforms to the MACC. Speaking at a forum on solutions to reform the MACC, he urged Malaysians to not be too focused on one case.
Kalaulah kita berjaya gantung Azam Tan Sri Azam Baki, 10 Azam Baki lagi boleh, masalah yang sama boleh timbul kalau kita tidak bersihkan sistem. Jadi maknanya perlu kepada pembersihan ataupun satu reformasi atau transformasi institusi SPRM itu sendiri. Jadi kita nak supaya satu SPRM yang betul-betul utuh, yang betul-betul kredibel, yang betul-betul boleh menyelesaikan masalah kita untuk membersihkan Malaysia daripada rasuah ini.
Meanwhile, at the same forum, the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs Ideas and the Center to Combat Corruption and Cronyism, C4, suggested the setting up of an independent anti-corruption commission, IACC, to oversee MACC as well as appoint its head. The commission, they said, would be a free and independent institution, uninfluenced by political and executive power.
So we are still in, wondering how the MACC boss is still basically having the job. This is a job that encompasses the most highest integrity of office. And we're trying to understand why there are people basically within MACC supporting him. All those kind of questions continue to get muddled into this whole story of the share ownership controversy. Because of this, we're trying to understand a little bit better in terms of how this will impact not just the body of MACC per se, but how Malaysia combats corruption altogether. In the previous week, last week, we spoke with Transparency International's Dr. Muhammad Mohan on this issue. He elaborates at length about what this means for not just the corruption body's longevity in the country in terms of combating graft, but also what it means to be a Malaysian when it comes to corruption. Here is Dr. Muhammad Mohan.
Plus, also don't forget, there was an issue of $600 went missing from the MACC's custody recently. And it was replaced by some counterfeit notes. And there were also some couple of officers involved in some robbery case in Ampang, involving about 700,000 ringgit. So all this has actually blown up and has really damaged MACC's reputation. Therefore, any investigation done by MACC on its own personnel will not be accepted by the general public. So it's going to be a major, major image issue and public perception issue.
Mohan urged an independent panel to commence immediate investigations into Azam's case. He also stressed the need for reform in the Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission Act 2009.
First step to be done is the investigation should be done by an independent panel. Okay, that is the first step. Without getting that done, we can't move. That is the first step. The second step is once this investigation is done, this report should be given to the Parliamentary Select Committee for Agencies, which comes under the Prime Minister's Department. And they should report this in Parliament and make it transparent. That means the public will know the outcome of these findings and what are the next steps to be done. Now, the other thing is the MACC Act itself may require amendments And you see, at the moment, the MACC is a commission under the Act. Civil societies, we have already recommended that the MACC should be elevated to be a commission under the Constitution, which means that the MACC reports to the Parliament. Parliament means to this Parliamentary Select Committee. Of course, it's easily said than done. This will require amendments to the Constitution, and that will require support from both sides of the political divide, because they require a two-third majority.
So as you can see, if you want to repair MACC, it's not just about a matter of trying to go to the organization and fix it. You have to change the law. You have to change the MACC Act. In doing so, you have to get the majority of the parliamentarians to agree to this. Also, you're looking at two-thirds of it. Let's face it, a lot of the populist stance will be continued on by this current government. There will be a populist slant as well by the current administration and those that support the current administration. So all we can pray and hope is that MACC can cobble together some form of working relationship with the rest of the parliamentarians and with that of the PAC in order for them to continue to have that kind of integrity. But as you heard just now from Transparency International, the kind of integrity or the kind of reputation that MACC has been facing is actually quite tremendous over the past, not just few weeks, but generally speaking, over the past few years. MACC has their job stacked against them. There's nothing that we can do to fix it other than getting the parliamentarians involved, two-thirds of them, to change via a constitution amendment. And that says a lot about the body. We'll go for one short break. When we come back, we'll discuss a little bit more on the week ahead with me, Ibrahim Sani. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back. This is The Week Ahead, a show that explores the kind of items and activities that will take place in the next 7 days that will help you navigate your world and navigate your way of living. We are entering the third week of January. My name is Ibrahim Sani. I'm still working from home when it comes to this show, at least. There's a lot of things that is going to be done on my show, Notepad with Ibrahim Sani, this time, Mondays through Fridays. Over the next few days, I'll be speaking with Habib Jewel's CEO. I'll be speaking with the Volvo CEO, Volvo Car Malaysia CEO, and all the other kind of interviews that might be of interest to you. So do check it out, Notepad with Ibrahim Sani at 10:30 p.m. on Astro Awani. Moving along, let's move on to the vaccine news because like many of us, all of us are actually quite interested to find out when our booster shot is going to take place. I myself have just taken my booster shot. We are joining about 40% of total adult population that have taken the booster shots. But of course, very recently, the sale of COVID vaccine 19 certificates and cases involving unvaccinated Umrah pilgrims have exposed some loopholes in the SOP or the standard operating procedure imposed by the government. And of course, public health specialist, a good friend of Astro Awani, Dr. Muhammad Farhan Rusli, shares his thoughts on the matter when it comes to the Umrah goers and how this impacts people like you and me.
In effect, it actually boils down to a systematic, treason. By the people, and then they are trying to lie their way into the system. So the doctor himself is involved, the public itself is involved. I'm not sure about the travel agents. I don't know whether they're involved or not. But you can only check so much, and you can only expect the immigration officers to check so much. Because how do you tell if I bring a vaccination card that's been stamped by a medical professional, whether it's real or not real? You obviously need to take that card into what it is. So in the end, definitely you cannot have 100% perfect system, but rather you can have a system that is actually well monitored. And this is exactly why you need to have proper audits in place. And I understand that this boils down also to the multiple stories where vaccines were being sold off and all that. If you remember when we were talking about it a couple of months ago. And this actually is one of the things that was actually done, where the doctors would actually sell off some of these vaccines, and perhaps to those people who did not want to get the vaccine, but just wanted the vaccine certificates. So with all of this, right, you have to take all these external factors into account. And you have to plan your public health measures well, because you know that the Omicron variant is actually already in our community. Even though we've tried to be gatekeepers and ensuring that only vaccinated people get access to, for example, like IKEA or big convenience stores, yet, you know, some of these people would have gotten through this loophole, and these people would actually be the ones carrying this virus without anyone knowing. So in the end, Sarah, there is no definitive way of actually checking or actually making sure that everyone is really vaccinated or not. But rather, this is where you talk about public health empowerment, where people must know that it is their own personal responsibility to get themselves vaccinated.
If you go to COVID now, you're going to be able to see the breakdown of people being vaccinated. Like I mentioned earlier, 40% of adults have been receiving the booster shots. The PPV in PWTC, or the mega PPV, will undergo 9,000 vaccination booster shots daily moving forward. In and around the country, we're seeing a lot of booster shots being administered. Here in Astro, for instance, we are carrying out an in-house employee program for us to allow for vaccinations to take place. Now, of course, I would urge you to find out more resources, particularly when it comes to cross-vaccination of different brands, how it impacts you. And of course, the key feature here is that most health professionals recommend you not to take painkillers that is of NSAID type. Stick to PCM, if anything. And of course, some other recommendations include having a light meal before you go for the vaccination. It's not that the first time we're doing this. We've been doing this thrice now. Again, on COVID now, you would be able to see adult population, 98% of us have received at least one booster one shot vaccination, and 7% adult population has received two shots, and now 40% over are seeing that as well. Now, the next story is, of course, my colleague Farhana, who just came back from Dubai, attending the Dubai Expo. It's quite interesting because Malaysia is showcasing the country's digital ecosystem at the World Expo in Dubai, the first time the International Cultural Exhibition is held in the Middle East. And of course, Farhana shares the story coming in from Dubai. Farhana, over to you.
I'm currently at Expo 2020 Dubai, where beside me at the Malaysian Pavilion was the launch of Malaysia Digital Economy Week by Minister of Multimedia and Communication Tan Sri Anwar Musa, during which he announced the rebranding of MSC Malaysia that will now be known as Malaysia Digital. After 25 years, MSC Malaysia will be rebranded and adapted to fit the current needs of Malaysians today.
The digital economy is projected to contribute 25.5% to Malaysia's GDP by the year 2025, as revealed in our 12th Malaysia Plan, highlighting the importance of catalyzing and sustaining the high growth of our digital economy. On that note, I'm happy to announce today at Expo 2020 Dubai that the MSC Malaysia initiative, after 25 fruitful and successful years, will be further enhanced, renamed, and customized to fulfill the needs and wants of today's demand.
To kickstart the launch, Tan Sri Anwar Musa also announced two flagship initiatives under the Malaysia Digital. The D Rantau program, which is aimed at establishing Malaysia as the preferred digital nomad hub, and the Malaysia Digital Trade program to facilitate trade within and across borders. Now, throughout this week at the Expo, we have seen a number of technology-based companies such as FinTech and Animation showcasing their latest technologies to attract foreign investors. The CEO of Malaysian Digital Economy Corporation, MDEC, Mr. Mahathir Aziz, has said that during this week alone, they're expected to attract 300 million ringgit worth of potential investment with 50 business prospects all over the world. Now, that sure sounds amazing. Malaysia has definitely seen a tremendous feat in the digital economy landscape, and we hope for it to expand further. That is all I have for you. Reporting from Expo 2020 Dubai, stay tuned for more updates only on Astro Al-Wani.
So remember, that's exactly what she said. Dubai Expo 2020, this has been 2 years in the making. And of course, a lot of eyes are on Dubai Expo 2020. There's a lot more that can be covered. In fact, Farhana is interviewing three individuals. One of them is, of course, the MDAX CEO that will be showcased on my show, Notepad with Ibrahim Sani, next week. And of course, you can actually catch all the shows there as well. We'll go for one more short break before we conclude. This show will be right back after these messages. Welcome back. This is The Week Ahead, a show that showcases the types of things and activities that will take place over the next 7 days that will help you navigate your world and your business. As mentioned earlier, it's going to be a very short week for many of us because most of us are taking Monday off, and of course, Tuesday is Thai Pusam. Because of that, we take a look into some other elements when it comes to the things that are currently happening in and around the country. One of them is, of course, conservatism and, of course, environmentalism. These are the kind of things that needs to be talked about more than often. And, of course, let's now explore the story of the Malayan tiger conservation as well. Because the Malayan tiger is on the verge of extinction. We've known this for quite some time. And unless extraordinary measures are being taken to address immediate conservation, we're going to be losing out for good when it comes to the Malayan tiger. The Dewan Rakyat was told last November, a few months ago, that the tiger could become extinct in as little as 5 years from now. The UPM says it is time to act fast. Here is Dr. Wan Noor Fitri when it comes to tiger conservatism.
Since we are dealing with a very critical number of tigers, it is also wise to be thinking about assisted reproductive technology or cryopreservation of gametes, which is the female animal's eggs, and for the males is the sperm, because it's actually like this cryopreservation technique will allow you to preserve whatever cells of the animals. Let's say now we're dealing with 200 population of tigers, right? If in the future the numbers decline even further, what we would like to have in our bank, in our frozen bank, is that there are some gametes of these individuals that may have been lost, but if we manage to cryopreserve them, we can still use this DNA, so to say, these gametes, in order for us to bring back the genetic biodiversity of the species, because it is very, very important for us to have a diverse genetic pool in tiger. Otherwise, we're dealing with very cryptic or limited genetics for us to sustain the population.
He said assisted reproductive technology, ART, is best paired with cloning techniques. This is to ensure diversity in genetic makeups, which enhances chances of successful breeding.
This is where the technique is actually coupled with cryopreservation of gametes, assisted reproductive technologies, because what we're seeing now is even with natural mating, the tiger is breeding at a slower pace than we would like. So it's not as fast as we would like to. Would like it to see. So ART comes into handy, very important in terms of pairing some tigers that are not compatible.
Now that research and technology to increase tiger population is set in stone, all we need right now is enough funding.
If we were to talk about cost, I would imagine we probably need to spend a few more millions in order for us to actually launch the stem cell and cloning project. Otherwise, without appropriate fundings or without the desired funding, this would be very, very challenging indeed. And as you rightly pointed out, I also mentioned that time is of the essence in conservation of the Malayan tiger. So what happens usually with research that are not well funded is that it will still grow, basically biologically grow, but it takes time, which at the moment we do not. We are not endowed with Malayan tiger.
You can contribute to the tiger conservation efforts. Just look for the Malayan tiger bodies, including that of Zunegara, for instance, as well as UPM's own body. And of course, they need all the help they can get, not just in terms of dollars and cents or ringgit and sen, but of course, in terms of efforts as well, at least in terms of awareness. So do play your part in tiger conservation. Malayan tiger is indeed our own identity. Moving along, next week, we're going to see more people going to think about traveling. We're going to think about more cross-border travel. And because of that, as we open up our borders and as we open up our international thinking of where to go next, it's important for us to note that Malaysia has been ranked the 12th most powerful passport in the world, up one place from last year. And of course, we can't go any higher than this because of our non-diplomatic ties with Israel. But otherwise, generally speaking, many of the countries that we can go, we don't need visa. So Malaysian passport holders currently have visa-free access to over 179 countries. And this is, of course, according to the newest edition of the Hanley Passport Index.
Within Southeast Asia, the Malaysian passport still retains its position as the second most powerful passport in the region, behind Singapore. Singapore and Japan passports once again tied for most powerful in the world. Holders of passports from the two countries can travel without a prior visa to 192 destinations. Germany and South Korea, meanwhile, held on to joint second spot on the latest ranking, with passport holders able to access 190 destinations visa-free. Afghanistan sits at the bottom of the index with access to just 26 countries without requiring a visa in advance. The Hanley Passport Index also noted that there is a widening gap between wealthier countries and poorer ones when it comes to travel freedoms. It says that increasing travel barriers introduced over the course of the pandemic have resulted in the widest global mobility gap in the index's 16-year history. This is illustrated by growing disparity between countries in the global north and those in the global south, with nationals from countries such as Sweden and the US able to visit more than 180 destinations visa-free, while passport holders from Angola, Cameroon and Laos are able to enter only about 50.
So let me know what you think about travel. Just tweet me up at Ibrahim Saninet to give me some ideas if you plan to travel overseas, either for work or for leisure. I know for a fact I'm going to be traveling a lot moving forward, particularly now that I've gotten my own booster shot. I'm not going to be deported from Australia like Djokovic. So there's a lot of room for me to travel as well. So do let me know about what you think your plans are going to be. Now, final story for this evening on the week ahead is, of course, in terms of how people think 2022 is going to be shaping up compared to 2021. This is because most people, both in Malaysia and globally, do expect that 2022 will be better than 2021. A survey done by a market research organization, Ipsos, has revealed that 82% of Malaysians feel a lot more optimistic about this year compared to last year, while the global average, about 77% of people feel the same. Here to explain the findings is the boss of Ipsos Malaysia, Arun Menon.
In this year, it's more driven by the fact that, you know, despite the fact, you know, challenges of being there is Omicron out there, and, you know, the infections are picking up across multiple countries in UK and the US and like the others. They are saying that at least we have a solution for it. And we have seen different surges in the pack. There is Delta, there is Alpha, Beta, what the different, you know, the Greek alphabet that we have gone through. But they say that, you know, we can get through it. It's one feeling that, you know, we have seen different variation. It's not going to be as bad as it used to. It has. So 2021, to be honest, for Malaysia and many countries in Asia was much bad than 2020. Right. So in the absolute number of infections that Malaysia has seen in 2021 is much better than 2020. So now initially we used to be worried about 100 infections per day. Now even 3,000, we say it's normal. Right. So that's where that normal has changed. So now people can cope up with 2,000. They say, like, OK, even if there is another surge, we can deal with that.
Meanwhile, 75% Malaysians think the global economy will strengthen this year compared to the year before.
We do measure what we call the consumer confidence index for Malaysians, right? Are you willing to go ahead? And so some of the questions that we ask is that, obviously, your financial situations, are you willing to save more? Would you be making a large purchase like a car or like, you know, an apartment, or even the smaller purchases like household items, that, right? All of these indicators is actually showing a very positive momentum from the, slightly later September, once we started opening the economy after the MCOs, and over the through this month, especially in, you know, November and December months, which we measure. So all of them are reaching to the levels which is pre-pandemic level. And the other part also, COVID as one of the concerns that we used to measure has dropped significantly as one of the concerns for Malaysians over the last few months. So they are more likely at this point of time to buy, you know, and put an investment for a house or put an investment to buy a new car. So that's another sign of, you know, optimism.
So that's it for the week ahead, for the third week of June. If you've missed any part of this episode, just head on to astroawani.com, search for the week ahead. Also, please share some of your ideas and some of your thoughts about this show, and perhaps contribute some of your stories as well. Just tweet to me at IbrahimZaninet, or hit me up on Instagram or LinkedIn. I'm everywhere on social sites. Until then, thanks very much for watching, and goodbye.